Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not news to say in 2019 that social media might not be very good for us. To say that it's doing things to us, collectively, that we never anticipated and that we can't easily fix. That's just social media in general. And then there's Facebook.
Canada's privacy commissioner is slamming Facebook, saying the social media giant breached the privacy of Canadians.
Canadians are at risk because the protections offered by Facebook are essentially empty.
Facebook announcing a new digital currency called Libra, and Facebook says this digital currency aims to make it as easy to send money around the world as it is to send a photo.
Libra will be a global payment system, fully backed by a reserve of cash and highly liquid assets. Now, I believe that this is something that needs to get built, but I get that I'm not the ideal messenger for this right now.
It's pretty clear right now that Facebook doesn't have the best interests of its users at heart. That's become evident one scandal at a time for the last half of this decade. What is news this year, though, and what is, when you stop to think about it, kind of terrifying, is that this is the year that Facebook stopped pretending to hide its plans for world domination. It's one thing to have a bad reputation, to have people see you, unfortunately, as the bad guy. It's another thing to actively become the villain. And have you deleted your Facebook profile because of it? Didn't think so. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This week, the biggest stories of 2019. Today, technology and the year that Facebook stopped pretending. Jesse Hirsch is a futurist, a researcher, and a newsletter writer. You can subscribe at metaviews.ca. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, Jordan.
Can you start just by taking me through what happened with Facebook this year?
Well, I think without being cliche, they lost face. I think this was the year in which the sheen came off, and in particular, the narrative changed from Facebook being this champion to Facebook being innocent to now Facebook being kind of guilty, or for many people, the bad guy, when it comes to whether it's their impact on democracy, their impact on society, or just what's cool when you think about what the kids are using on social media.
Can you maybe take me back to when it sort of started changing from champion to innocent, when we first got an inkling of like, this platform might not just be good?
Well, I think the clear pivot was Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took a long time for people to really dissect and understand what that episode was. And it was really this time last year that the auditing of Facebook's response to Cambridge Analytica not so much showed malice, but showed that the company was both trying to cover that up and wasn't really doing anything to respond. I think that's when government started to get really serious about, hey, maybe we need rules for Facebook. Maybe they need to be reined in. And that's when the extremism and social media narrative started to come out, where people started to connect the dots and say, maybe social media is fostering extremism. What are extremists doing on Facebook? What extent are lies being spread on Facebook? And I think that's where you always had a small contingency of I told you so's, who had for a very long time been saying, hey, Facebook's terrible. Mm-hmm. I think they got a certain amount of vindication, but I think it was the legacy media, the mainstream media, that also said, hey, maybe we should not be so mindlessly embracing Facebook, but be a little more critical on their influence. And so I think it was a sort of catalyzation of different factors that really allowed at the start of this year for the frame to change, and Facebook hasn't recovered. I think throughout the year, everything they've done has either been met with skepticism or cynicism. And so I think the company's reputation and I think the public's perception of it has shifted quite dramatically.
How much of that is due to the messy business of what the company does and how it does it? And how much of that is due to the public presentation of Mark Zuckerberg?
I think it's both. I think it's natural that we would resent, if not be jealous, of someone like Mark Zuckerberg with his wealth and his power. But I think as a political leader, he's really not up to the task. I mean,
it's interesting that you're calling him a political leader.
Well, I've in the last year, my attitude on Facebook has shifted in that I no longer think of them as a company. I call them a rogue state in that I almost feel that the best way to understand them is not as a social media company, not as a publisher, but as a government. And as a government in the softest sense, but in the way that Facebook does create a kind of society, that when you go to Facebook, it's like you've gone somewhere else and you're interacting with other people. But I also say this because I think Facebook needs to be democratized. I think Facebook users need the rights of citizenship. And I think the answer to Facebook's problem is to empower people to have a voice, to create a parliament, if you will, so that Facebook users could help legitimize Facebook. Because Zuckerberg is a tyrant. As the controlling shareholder, he's not accountable to anybody. There's no one who could say you're fired. There's no one who could say you've made a mistake. And that's partly why they have floundered in the last year. There's no one who can step in and change management, which would happen at any other company if they had encountered such a crisis in confidence and such a deterioration of their reputation. But I think the other side, as you alluded to, is Shoshana Zuboff's notion of surveillance capitalism. And in her describing surveillance capitalism and in that concept becoming popular.
Describe it for us for people who have not familiarized themselves.
Well, it's the idea that Facebook makes money off surveillance, that they use that surveillance to harvest our data, which they commodify and make money off. And so she uses surveillance capitalism as a way to distinguish it from the normal free market, that it's predatory, that it maybe doesn't involve our consent, that it's creepy. And I think that caught on with people. I think where we all sort of knew that Facebook was using our data, it sort of went from, okay, yeah, it's advertising to, oh, yeah, it is kind of creepy. Because the other phenomenon is we've all had that moment where we're having a conversation with friends and then the Facebook ads start literally showing what we had that conversation with.
I think I've had that conversation with people five times this year about that happening.
Right. And I think that's pop culture. And whether that's advances in predictive analytics or whether that's just Facebook being creepy, it doesn't matter. I think for the end user, it soured us on the power that Facebook has.
Did something profound change this year for Facebook? Because you mentioned Cambridge Analytica and that report was last year. And as much as when we talked to people like yourself and other tech experts last year, there was a sense that like, yeah, this is bad for democracy. I hadn't seen that penetrate the general public to the way I feel it has this year. What shifted?
I think part of it is the echo effect of social media as a whole, that as more of us started saying that, as the drum started to get louder and louder, it penetrated into the public consciousness. But I think it's also U.S. politics. I think it's that we are in a presidential primary year. I think people see the polarization. I think the issue around Facebook advertising not having to be truthful is something that caught people's attention.
Yes.
And I think it's also just the governments around the world engagement of Facebook. I mean, here in Canada, we hosted the Grand Committee on Privacy and Big Data. We had MPs from around the world. You know, we summoned Mark Zuckerberg. He didn't show up. But I think those theatrics do give the public a reason to pay attention. And then Facebook's attempt to introduce a digital currency, Libra, I think also caught certainly the blockchain enthusiast's attention.
Right.
And I think everyone sort of likes the idea of, okay, yes, money needs to be upgraded, but do we trust Facebook to handle that monetary system? I think the stakes are high. And I think people are realizing just how much power Facebook has. And I think it's finally getting into an accessibility that allows most people to really wrap their heads around why maybe Facebook is a problem.
Are there concrete things that governments around the world could do right now to take some of that power away from Zuckerberg and put it back in the hands of, if not their citizens, then at least the people those citizens elect?
So I think on an easy level, there's the issue of liability and the idea that Facebook should be responsible for the content on Facebook. And it, on the one hand, acknowledges they're a kind of media company and they should be held to the same standards as other media companies. But I think the bigger issue, the bigger policy is antitrust, is calling Facebook a monopoly. And on the one hand, that means breaking it up, separating Instagram into a different company, separating WhatsApp into a different company, maybe even separating Facebook's analytics capabilities, the data that they collect from all over the world, putting that into a separate company. But it also then places rules on, say, who Facebook can buy. Because if it was just an open market and any social media company could compete against the other, that's one thing. But Facebook has already demonstrated that they'll just buy out anyone who's a threat to them. You know, Snapchat was a holdout. They were the one companies who said no. But there is a long track record of Facebook and the other Silicon Valley monopolies stifling innovation by buying any potential challenger. So even just restricting them from that might be enough to destabilize the social media marketplace and allow consumers to have greater options for what they do with their time and their data.
Is there any sense that those concrete moves will actually happen? I know there's been a lot of hearings and summits and committees, et cetera. How does it move beyond that?
I think in North America right now, we're stuck. We're politically immobilized by the divided nature of our politics. In America, between Democrats and Republicans, here in Canada, right, in terms of minority government. But it's Europe, I think, that will continue to lead when it comes to digital policy. France just recently introduced a tax on Facebook.
What does that look like?
Well, it looks at the idea that if you could at least start generating tax revenues from these companies, you could use that money to fund research. You could use that money to fund startups. You could use that money to fund high-speed broadband. I mean, there's all sorts of ways in which I think these companies could be taxed, could be reined in. But your question of whether it's going to happen, not in North America, not anytime soon. And I think that's the tragedy, because Facebook's going to get larger. And their power, once they get past a certain point as a monopoly, there is no potential competition. There is no means by which the government could restrict them, which is why I joke about calling Zuckerberg a politician and Facebook a government. I recently wrote a short story about Alberta separating from Canada to join Facebook, just as an exercise to contemplate what that would entail. But I don't think it was that absurd, because it sort of speaks to how, if you think a government provides services, what if Facebook could provide better and more responsive public services than the Canadian government could? Or what if Facebook could collect taxes more efficiently than the federal government could? And the scary thing about those types of questions is sometimes you think, well, maybe they could.
So this is the kind of scary part of this conversation, and you just touched on it. We're talking about what a bad year Facebook's had. Are they getting more powerful at the same time as we're having the conversation about how bad a year they've had?
They're getting more powerful and they're getting more profitable. I mean, as a company, they continue to make billions upon billions of dollars, which allows them to have a war chest to buy any competitor, lobby any government that's trying to regulate them, and potentially even pay off their users. If, as they changed, for example, one of their analytics programs from being one where you didn't get paid to one where you actually do get a modest amount of money. So it speaks to what are their ambitions and where do they want to go from here. And that's where you get glimpses from Google getting into healthcare, you know, Amazon getting into healthcare. At what point does Facebook say, hey, we're going to get into healthcare too, just because of the value of health data and Facebook's ability to not only possess that data, but analyze and crunch that data. So I alarmingly still think these are early days for Facebook, that their growth trajectory is still going up. Their reputation may be falling, but we could call them the evil empire, and that's still not going to change what they do. And their services are easy to use. And because they're so easy to use, people will still keep using them.
I think at one point, there was a thought about Facebook, when we still thought about it as just a social media company, that the kids would move on to Instagram, to Snapchat, to TikTok now, et cetera, et cetera. And Facebook would become a relic as people aged out of it. Is that going to happen still?
I don't think so. I mean, it could. What's interesting about TikTok is Facebook can't buy it.
Because it's Chinese.
Because it's already owned by a very large conglomerate that, you know, has equal potential when it comes to competing with Facebook. And if anything, Facebook does point to China as its ultimate competition, that Facebook sort of sees itself as part of this Western bloc against, you know, the rising Chinese technology industry. But I'm not sure that Facebook can be stopped short of either a very embarrassing scandal that, you know, ultimately causes shareholders to revolt. Although, again, it's Mark Zuckerberg who's the controlling shareholder. Or if there was very severe government regulation, which isn't going to happen because America benefits from Facebook being powerful and being unbridled, as it were. So this is why I say that I think this is the early days of, you know, what would be, imagine the Hudson's Bay Company, what would be the Dutch East India Company, the British East India Company. I mean, Facebook is an empire. What they choose to do, I think, is up to them and up to the power of data and the power of AI. But I think fundamentally, Facebook is still in its adolescence. It's a bit of an uncomfortable adolescence, but still far from adulthood. And I think Facebook is not only going to reach adulthood, but be a very dominant global player.
If you had to guess now, what's next on their checklist for world domination?
I think Facebook is very serious about their Libra currency. And I think Facebook is very serious about banking. If you think about how Facebook used automation to disrupt the media industry, I think there's even greater potential for them to use automation to disrupt the financial services industry.
Give me an example of that.
Well, banks run their entire systems off legacy, off really old computers. It would be easy for Facebook to offer checking accounts that not only didn't cost you, the customer, any money, but they actually gave you interest on a checking account, which no bank does. You know, similarly, they could offer you an AI robo-advisor, which would be far more effective and personalized than what the banks could do, because Facebook has a huge head start when it comes to building those machine learning models. And further, if Facebook could create their own currency so that all the unbanked people in the world who can't afford a bank account, who don't use any existing currency, if they started using Facebook's currency, not only is that a treasure trove of data, but that's what I mean by, you know, Facebook as a government, that it literally allows them to create a fully integrated society where you're not only enabling people's culture and storytelling, you're enabling their money, their economic, their monetary system. And I think that's why Facebook Libra is so important, and why in 2020 it's going to be a contest between Facebook and governments as to whether they'll allow it and or whether Facebook will just ignore those governments and do it anyway. I think it'll be a real test as to their future ambitions and whether the company could ever be stopped.
In the very near term, you touched on the 2020 presidential election. I want to ask you a bit about what you think will happen in that election, because unlike in 2016, the Americans are going into this election knowing what Facebook is, knowing what it does to democracy and how disinformation can spread and all the stuff we've heard about for the last like 3 years. So given that, how does Facebook influence this election?
I think the obvious answer is increased polarization. I think we'll see people becoming very tribal when it comes to their candidates or their parties rather than focusing on issues. And I think Facebook's policy around not regulating political advertising will very much fuel that polarization. But I think the other is a delegitimization. I think no matter who wins the election, there'll be so many people who disbelieve the results, who think that it's fixed, who think that the person who won is illegitimate for whatever reason. I think that's the fundamental effect that both benefits whatever foreign interference is happening, but it also creates kind of benefits Facebook. Because if my wild hypothesis is correct, that Facebook is a kind of government, well, if larger, legitimate, historic governments are all of a sudden, we question their legitimacy, we question whether that person really won the election, that does kind of benefit Facebook, both because there's then not a legitimate government to regulate them, but also it makes Facebook increasingly look like the space, the parliament, the commons, where these types of decisions and this type of popular sentiment is settled.
Could Facebook decide the election if they wanted to?
Absolutely. And that was kind of what I got at in my short story of sort of suggesting that they would engineer an Alberta secessionist campaign and engineer a referendum. Because they absolutely could. There's tons of research around whether it's the emotional contagion research around impacting people's emotions on Facebook or just, you know, mobilizing people to vote or discouraging people from vote. Facebook does not do this. I do not believe that Facebook does this. But if Mark Zuckerberg was no longer in control and someone who was far more Machiavellian decided that they wanted to do this, it is absolutely possible. The question is whether other people would do it as well. And that's the competitive nature of elections, that if one party has an advantage, usually the other party figures out that advantage and adopts those same dirty tricks. So if Facebook started to tip the scales on the election, maybe Google would as well.
Yeah.
Maybe Amazon would follow
suit. Somebody goes running to Jack Dorsey at Twitter and says, hey,
we got to do something. And I think that's the fear, that it's a race to the bottom. right? That we have a democracy that's really based on a social contract, and it's not prepared for technology to break that social contract and start undermining the assumptions and expectations we have both of fairness, but also of the outcome that we accept, even if we lose, that the outcome was fair and we got to stick with that person for 4 or 5 years. And I think the flip side now is more and more people are believing it's fixed, believing it's crooked, and that'll make it harder for governments to govern because they won't actually be seen as legitimate by the people.
The flip side of that is, if Zuckerberg really does have good intentions, could he use Facebook after the election to reinforce the outcome and legitimize whoever won, Republican or Democrat?
Yes, he absolutely could. And I think that's where Mark is a bit of a politician, that I think at some point he is going to try to use Facebook for good. And the question is, will he be effective, right? Is Facebook a surgical tool or is it a blunt instrument? And as a blunt instrument, it may not be able to do Chairman Mark's bidding. And I think that's the danger, that even though he means well, meaning well is not enough. And we need rules and regulations. But I would end by saying, as a silver lining, this year has been incredibly encouraging because all of a sudden the public woke up.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the public said, hey, we got to be concerned about this. And I don't think that's going away. In fact, I think it's going to increase even more and apply to the tech sector as a whole. So I think that's something we can see encouragement from. I just wish politicians would follow the public's lead when it comes to that kind of skepticism and more critical approach to technology.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Jordan.
Jesse Hirsch is a futurist and a researcher, and somehow he always manages to scare the crap out of me. If you'd like to be scared regularly, subscribe to his newsletter, metaviews.ca. That was The Big Story. For more from us, including the other biggest stories of the year, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find them there, and tomorrow you will find our last big story of the year. Obviously, it's politics. You can also find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN and at FrequencyPodcastNetwork.com. Please subscribe and listen and rate and review wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Acast. Pick 'em. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.